Welcome to the August 7th edition of the PFF Forecast. I'm George, joined as usual by Eric, looking extra fresh today. Rumor has it, just got out of the shower, which is why the hair is on point. If you're watching on YouTube, you can obviously see both of us. If you're listening, we appreciate you just as much. We're going to talk some of the interesting news that's come out. One, Matthew Stafford's elbow pain. Two, the Kareem Hunt saga, which is interesting in and of itself. We're going to recap the Raiders-Jags game because that definitely deserves a recap. That's going to be very short. Don't worry. We've got some strategy for betting the preseason, plus any week one bets that we think you should make now, and a great debate. Who's the better wide receiver, Justin Jefferson or Cooper Kupp, and slash another young player that has been in the news with Justin Jefferson. So it's going to be a fun podcast. We'll close it out with recommendations. Let's rock. Eric, I'm going to give you 10 seconds to recap the Raiders-Jaguars game. On your mark, get set, go.
Trayvon Walker had two pressures and a sack and nine total pass rushing snaps, graded 72.7. The big one was Kyle Sloter came in at halftime, covered the second half, covered the over. Any pregame bets on Jacksonville? I'm sorry.
Yeah.
But
that was what you should have led with. That's what you should have led with is the if you bet the Jags pregame, pour one out. Did you obviously like these preseason games matter zero, but it was interesting on Twitter, social media in general, the sentiment was same old Jags before, Jags are terrible. Is now the time to buy the Jags?
It could be. I mean, that team looked very disinterested in tackling, though. The Raiders certainly tried. By the way, can we pause? I want to develop a new metric for whether a draft pick is a bust, and I think that metric is, did you play in this game? Because, like, Josh Jacobs is out there. Like, how many carries did that dude get? He got, like, he got work in that game. And then Kenyon Drake was in that game. Dude, Josh Jacobs got five carries in that game.
McDaniel afterwards said that, now I have my own take here, but what did Josh McDaniel say was that he likes to get backs in there so that they can get some hits in, get tackled. I assume this is something that comes from, you know, this is the Patriot way kind of thing that I'm bringing over, but yeah, which you love. But one thing that I would read into it perhaps is sending a message. Look, the old way, whatever Gruden told you, whatever Mayock told you, does not matter. You know, we do not care, right? So, you know, they picked this guy in the first round. We don't give a, you know what. And maybe that's the edge that we need from Josh McDaniel. Maybe he's coming in with kind of a little bit of a FU attitude. I don't know. That's me reading way more into like, this, what I do think is interesting from if you're a fantasy player, the reticence to pick Josh Jacobs, like that, you know, I did a draft with Dwayne McFarlane, on Friday night because I wanted to test out PFF's new fantasy tool. And so it's like this $350 buy-in, bunch of players who, you know, fantasy players who play a ton of fantasy. This was my first draft. I'd done zero prep. So I rock in there and it was like picking Josh Jacobs was like automatically getting like herpes. And so like he was left there, like no one wanted to take him. So that is another thing that you can take advantage of. By the way, go to underdog. Fantasy.com, download the app, use promo code PFF when you do your best ball drafts. They'll match your first $100 up to $100. And if you play 10 bucks with promo code PFF, you get a PFF subscription. So you can take advantage of those things in something like best ball where they have, you know, you can win millions of dollars there without having to tend to your team week over week. So it is something that you can, I think, take advantage of. Is there anything like, let's forget this Jags Raiders game for a second. When you think about the rest of the preseason, how are you thinking about it? How are you thinking about betting it? And slash, is there anything to be taken away maybe from the preseason for week one, perhaps, right? Like, you know, that you could take advantage of sentiment.
Well, I think you have to look at old patterns. Like, you know, we're going to talk about Stafford in a second, but like the Rams don't, you know, play their starters in the preseason. So if Stafford sat the entire preseason, that's not necessarily meaningful, right? But, you know, like I had a friend who moved to Kansas City. It's like, hey, which game should I go see Mahomes? And I'm like, well, the second week of the preseason was when they played him a ton last year. He played a little bit in the third and a little bit in the first. And, you know, like looking at old patterns by, you know, if you get a PFF Elite subscription, you can go look at snap counts. And I think, you know, obviously 2020, there was no preseason. 2021 was the first year with three preseason games. So you can go and look at some of these coaching staffs and see how they deployed their players last year, you know, with snap counts and stuff at PFF.com. But if they deviate from that, that's a big deal, right? I mean, mm-hmm. I think if you know, you're looking at, you know, hey, Patrick Mahomes is playing 32 snaps in this game, in the second game, and, you know, the three wide receivers that open up and play the whole time are Juju, MVS, and Hardman, then the Sky Moore hype is not necessarily mm-hmm. going to, you know, materialize the way that it is in camp. You know what I'm saying? Like, I yep. think that it's that kind of thing where, like, we're all looking at, you know, we're all looking at Tua in camp or whatever, or we're all looking at Romeo Doubs from the Green Bay Packers is flashing and like all this kind of stuff. If it doesn't materialize into reps in like the preseason games where players, you know, are supposed to be sort of like repping it through, then that's a problem. There are other like little stuff like who's going to make the team and stuff. You kind of want to look at special teams, where like if a player is on the punt team in the second or third preseason game, they're probably making the team mm-hmm. because that's like mm-hmm. one of those weird like weak link things. So there are a number of ways you can look at the preseason that way. As far as betting it, I think that it's like a little bit, you know, you have to be careful. So I have a friend who is in the betting space who told me, he's like, look, Calgary has, you know, tons of COVID. Bet Ottawa this week in CFL. And the number did go from 6 to 4.5. Ultimately, like, that never materialized. It closed 5. And, like, and you're stuck with, like, a bad bet, right, in many cases. Preseason, that's what everything is, right? People are like, hey, I heard through the grapevine that the Patriots are playing everybody, or I heard that the Browns are playing Watson. You know, there was the one with like Trubisky playing the Bears, and it's like Trubisky's playing this whole game and he's trying to stick it to the Bears. Like, that kind of informational stuff is, you know, obviously when it's right, it's great and it's like exactly what you should bet this time of year. But when it's wrong, like, you're stuck, you know, hanging on to a ticket that isn't great, right? So you can try to handicap these games. I try not to for the most part. But you can also use some tried and true methods. We're going to write an article on the site this week about teasers. You can also just use the mathematical properties of football to get yourself some plus EV plays, assuming your book offers them.
The teasers are out there to be had, right? I mean, just to give a quick spark notes on this, the key numbers, and I actually had someone, we talked about teasing through zero last week as a bad thing to do, and had someone hit me up in the DMs. Hey, can you explain this a little bit? And so, you know, the idea here is when you tease, you pick a couple of games and you get 6 points added to whichever, to both sides. So you go, okay, well, where are those points valuable, right? Because the more, you know, not all points are created equal. Not every game lands with a difference in score equally across. And what do I mean by that? More games end with a score difference of 3 than with a score difference of 2 or 4. So if you can pick up those really important numbers, and the most important ones are 3 and 7, then you give yourself the best chance, right, of winning that bet, right? In other words, those numbers go from a bet that you would lose to a bet that you would win, and you want those on your side. So if you think about how do you cross 3 and 7 when you have 6 points, you want to go from two, right? Or 1.5 or 2 or 2.5 to get you across those numbers. And so you look at the preseason and there are a ton of those, right? So the Lions are plus 2.5 against Atlanta. The Cleveland Browns are plus 1.5 against Jacksonville. The Patriots are plus 2 against the Giants. Cardinals plus 1.5 against the Bengals. And all of these totals are 33 and a half. So that's the other thing that you always mention, which is really a good point. The lower scoring the game, the less likely a really wide margin of victory is to be had. And I think people can make that reasoning pretty intuitive, but it's obviously mathematically proven as well. And so the lower scoring the game, the better a teaser is for you. And why don't you tease through zero? For exactly that point. If you go through zero, it's very hard for you to pick up 3 and 7. In fact, you can't pick up both numbers if you go through zero. And by the way, ask yourself how many times a game ends with a score difference of zero, and you'll find that picking up that number is not particularly valuable for you.
Yeah, in the preseason, they have eliminated overtime, so there is a better chance that the game will end zero, but it's not that much higher. It's not high, right? Like, and to your point, like the thing with teasers, and it's twofold, right? The thing with teasers is that they don't discriminate based upon the game, meaning they give you, like, if you take a two team 6-point teaser, they give you 6 points no matter what. Mm-hmm. And so those 6 points, if you're teasing down now, it depends, you know, if you're teasing, let's say, from like minus 12 to minus 6, like, you know, you're basically saying, okay, there's enough probability gathered at 11, 10, 9, 8, and 7. 7's a key number, so that's like going to pile up a little bit. It's about 4% push probability. But those numbers are not going to add up to what you need, especially, and again, most books are going to give you something like minus 120. To make a minus 120 bet make sense, you have to have a break-even or better probability of 54.5. To have two bets, right, that are independent of each other, you just take the square root of that number. And I know, you know, bear with me, but you just take the square root of that number.
You got your whiteboard here.
and the square root of 54.5% is 73.8. So you basically need both of the bets, or the average of those two bets, have a win chance of about 74%. You know, so and if you come into it without any handicapping, basically what you're saying is the points that you're taking with the teaser have to have an accumulated probability of 74%. Now, if you have another book that offers you a minus 110, which like my friend and betting partner Ben Brown and I have one, and so you cherish it, it's 72.4%. So you get an extra percent and a half if you can get a book that gives you a teaser of 110. Some places are even worse, by the way. Like if you do like a Barstool sports book, I believe it was this way last time I checked, they're making you lay 150 for a teaser. You would never want to do that.
Which is
you're better off.
Should be punishable by jail time, to be honest.
Like the point is you want to have a bet that you wouldn't want already individually, but you would want if you got those extra points given to you. And that's the whole thing. So like, for example, if you're taking an underdog at 2.5, you know, there's actually like, okay, what is one and what is two worth? That depends on the total, but it's about a percent each, right? More or less 3% at the high end total. And then you're like, okay, well, is that enough for me? If I make the game a pick 'em, then why don't you just like actually just bet the money line type of thing? Like there are a number of ways where like you have to ask yourself, okay, if I'm teasing these down, it has to be because the points I'm teasing through are more valuable than the original bet. And that happens in the case, like when you're looking at teasing through three, which depending upon the total is like 8 or 9% in and of itself, 4, 5, 6, which is pretty key now, especially in the preseason, we have rookie kickers and stuff like that. And then 7, which is, as I said before, you know, 3 to 5%, depending upon the total. And then if you get that additional 8, by the way, 8 really is a big deal, especially now with the 2-point conversions, the 15 yard, extra point type of thing. So those points, being more valuable than any generic 6 points is the reason that teasers are valuable.
And by the way, the square root thing, just because I know, you know, for some it might not be totally intuitive. You assume each game is an independent event. So the probability of both those things happening, of two independent events happening, is just multiplying the probabilities of each. So you multiply both of those probabilities together, 73.3 or whatever it is, 74 times one another. And that's how you get, when you multiply those two together, you get 54.5. You cross that number. And so that's why taking the square root of it works, because the square root of a number less than one, between zero and one, obviously is greater than that. So that's how you kind of get that probability of, well, this has to be more, obviously, than it would be normally, right? If you have 55% or whatever it is, you need to get to 74% in order to actually make that make sense. There's one question that I have, because I was thinking about this. This seems like a relatively easy thing for sports books, you know, trading desk to like make an adjustment to, right? Where it's like, oh, is this crossing? Like, just ask, you know, the kind of, you know, before you return a price, just ask whether this is, which numbers this is crossing, and then give it a different price. You know, I, from your perspective, why don't they do that? I have some thoughts, but like, why don't they do that?
I don't know. Captain Jack Andrews, who's like one of the guys that started Unabated, did a video about FanDuel offering what are called pleasers, which is a teaser in the other direction, where you surrender points, but you do it at the payout's better. You surrender, you trade points for variance, essentially. And he showed that there was like a systematic problem in the way they were pricing them, and FanDuel figured it out eventually, right? Like, I just think they figured it out because they put in they implemented like a fix into their algorithm. I honestly just think it's because, here's a few reasons why. You should never tease college football games. Like, just, you know, maybe Big Ten when the total is like 41 or whatever, but like college football, like the points 3 and 7 are just not worth it to tease a college football game. And so that's like, that's 60 games a Saturday or 60 games a weekend, right?
Yep.
Most NFL games don't have teaser liability. Mm-hmm. So, you know, why throw out the bathwater for like 2 or 3 games where you're a little bit exposed? And like, and the edge you're giving is like maybe a percent or two. And I think that the biggest one is that it entices people who aren't talking about it this way to just tease stupidly, right? Like, we've seen, you know, like, I don't mean to call people out, but like, you see it, like Anita Marks on ESPN is like, I'm going to tease from -3 to +3, you know, and I'm going to tease this team down from 11. And we've done this like early in the, like, all these mistakes we've made before, by the way. So like, we're not, you know, these are,
I love the way you said that. Don't mean to call anyone out.
The space is A, young enough where some people haven't made these mistakes before. They haven't thought it through deeply. And this is important, content creators care more about their record than they do about their bankroll. So when somebody goes on ESPN and puts like a teaser together that teases a favorite from -3 to +3 or +3, and, you know, an underdog or a favorite, let's say, from like -12 to -6, they're just trying to get a 1-0 on the board.
Trying to get a W. Yep.
And that, you know, that's something that, you know, you have to acknowledge. You know, it was when Michael Schwimmer's thing, that tout service that came out before 2019.
I know what Jambos, you're talking about.
So yeah. Jambos tweeted. Jambos had an offering to their subscribers where they suggested they tease through 0. And ultimately, like, when I think it was Rufus Peabody asked him like why on a podcast, he basically explained that, like, given all of their numbers, it was actually plus EV, which I don't doubt. But Rufus came back and said, well, yes, it's that teaser's only plus EV because the original bet was so plus EV that even after you tease through 0, it has value. Right. And so why not just tell your subscribers to bet 2 units on the original bet?
Yes.
You know, the original, you know, and that highlighted, you know, that's the aha moment for folks, right? Where you're like, oh, this is really just about the record keeping and the touting more than it is about winning money and making sound bets. So that I think is the, you have to be aware of that, right? And so like, and I think books right now, it's probably rational for them just to provide like a it's probably like more cost effective just to provide one, you know, 6.2 team teaser price and, you know, lose money on the Wong teasers. This is a Stanford Wong who came up with the, you know, teasing through 2 or 3 and 7. And you're going to get it back on the kind of square teasers.
I was not expecting that to go all the way down that rabbit hole, but it's an interesting one, which is a really good point, right? So tout services, people, the common average bettor, the first question they ask is, what's your record, right? I mean, that's like, how many conversations have we had where it's like, yeah. Oh, what was your record? And it's like, well, and you immediately go, well, and like, you're trying to explain it, but to the average human being, that's the first question to ask. I mean, it's how sports works, right? What's your record? And so it's a really good point where content creators are often, because they're trying to appeal to the average fan, they're incentivized, to your point, to just say, well, I need to give a bet that wins. And it doesn't really matter what the cost is, right? And I'm not going to tell someone, hey, you know, this is -200, that, you know, what that means in terms of how much you have to stake in order to win. Because at the end of the day, people will just remember whether that bet hit or not. And so, I want to remember. And if it loses, yeah, they'll think of it the same way as any other loss. So I think you're dead on. That was going to be my rationale as well, is it's just not valuable enough for them to bother, right? It's like enough morons are out there teasing through zero that it just doesn't make that big of a difference to them. So that's preseason. I think that's a really good way to think about it. Is there anything that we've learned? Now there's been some questions about Matthew Stafford's elbow. The Bills are now -2. Now again, 2 is not the biggest number in world history, relative to 3, obviously, but it's not, you know, totally insignificant. The Bills are -2 in Los Angeles against the Rams opening night. Matthew Stafford's had some elbow pain. Now, he also made a no look touchdown pass to Allen Robinson, yeah, which in all of social media had to talk about, of course. Total 51.5 in that opener. There have been a couple other things that have moved. Ravens are -6 against the Jets. I think that was 5.5 at one point. You're seeing, you know, some small moves here or there. Our Lions +4. I think they were 4.5, yeah, for a little bit there. Is there anything that makes sense to kind of jump on from your perspective for week 1, because the narrative or the line you think will shift by the time we get there?
Yeah, I mean, and by the way, this Rams, you know, they were -1. It's now, you know, on the open, it's now -2 for Buffalo. You know, it's not that much, but it's significant. You know, it's not that much, but it's enough to sort of indicate that folks are laying it with Buffalo a little bit. The total 52.5, now 51.5. So that's, you know, if it got under 51.5, I think that you'd be looking at better saying, okay, I think the Rams are going to kind of play it safe. Stafford kind of like, you know, Stafford kind of threw it. Like, he didn't throw out his arm last year, but you know what I'm saying? Like, he threw a lot of footballs. And so I think, like, you know, do they play it safe there? Does it really matter for the Rams to have to beat the Bills? Because, you know, we know that NFC record is one of the key tiebreakers after original record and, you know, all that kind of stuff. The game probably means more to Buffalo. You know, I think about, you know, back in the day when another 4 seed,
does it though?
Remember when another 4 seed, the Ravens, faced Denver, a team that they upset on the way to the Super Bowl, and Peyton Manning threw 7 touchdowns on opening night. He's just like, we're the best team in the AFC. But like that, you know, the Buffalo Bills are on like a mission. I think the Rams, it's not that the Rams aren't, but it's different, right? But you know, when you look at this, you know, there's one that I think I really like, and I hate this because I know it's going to feed into the people that think we're really loving this player and we're being unfair to all the other players. Lay the 6.5 with the San Francisco 49ers against the Chicago Bears. The Yes. Bears are horrid. And the Niners, by the way, you can also tease that game down to -0.5, right? So you're teasing through 6-3, which isn't quite as good as obviously down, you know, but that total is 42, which Yep. means that 6-3 are more valuable than, you know, with the, you know, for example, Bills Rams, yep. that game is at 52. So all those points are spread out a little bit. That's the game that I'm looking at right now that I really like. You know, I know road favorites are not great, but that's like, I mean, I think that the Niners come out week one and they do even more than the talent difference between those two teams, which is immense.
It also may be the case, there is not a single positive thing that has come out about the Bears. I mean, not a single thing, right? Their own offensive coordinator was like, yeah, our offensive line is going to be a huge work in progress for a while. You know, it's like Tevin Jenkins, who they just, you know, they just picked is on the block. And it's like, but the interesting thing here about the Niners, and I think there's so this was one of the ones that I like, I would bet it now. And here's the reason. Obviously, the Bears, only more information is going to come out about how atrocious they are. They did not bring in a head coach who's going to kind of radically turn around their offense, right? Eberflus is a defensive guy. They're bereft of talent. They no longer have Khalil Mack. They don't have a receiver other than Darnell Mooney to speak of. And here's the interesting thing about the Niners. They have an improved defensive backfield. Like, their defense is one that should have its way with the Bears. This is the Nick Bosa leading, you know, right out of week one. Nick Bosa has 4 sacks and everyone's like, he's going to be defensive player of the year. That's the kind of game this is going to be. But from the offensive side of things, you know, people have been, well, Trey Lance threw an interception here. It's been a little, you know, topsy-turvy there. And that's something I would take advantage of, because Kyle Shanahan's going to be very good at controlling that narrative. There's no way that he is going to pump Trey Lance's tires up. And I mean, the offensive, you know, that the Niners have is so much better from a talent perspective than the Bears. So I like that one a lot.
The line of scrimmage also for the Niners is just, they're just so, like, to your point about like the Bears don't have a pass rush, but they also like they don't have Eddie Goldman anymore because, yep. you know, and he had reduced down to being not very good anyway. Robert Quinn had a lot of sacks last year, but it was kind of a hollow, right? A Chandler Jones like double digit sack season. The Niners at the line of scrimmage are just so much better than the Bears. So and then you add on top of that the running threat with Lance, which is gonna, you know, reduce. You also have, and I did a tweet thread about this looking at Eberflus linebackers.
Thank God.
Roquan Smith is not in camp. There's a decent chance that Roquan Smith doesn't end up playing. And to the degree that he's even good in the first place, like, that's a big deal. Whereas the Niners linebackers, like, look, like, let's face facts. You know, Justin Fields is throwing one right to Fred Warner in this game. Like, let's, you know. So that's one I really like, by the way.
Can I try and sell you on a teaser here?
Oh, well, they're all over the place in this.
There's a lot of them. So, but I want to ask you about the first leg. So the second leg, there are a bunch of options. And I want to go back actually to Rams Bills. So the total is coming down. The Rams have to know that the juice is on the, you know, that the people love the Bills. I mean, the Bills are the Super Bowl favorite. You know, all these different things. I would be, even though maybe they don't know exactly what the spread is, I think they've got to know that, you know, the Bills are favored here some way or another. They're +2. They're the defending Super Bowl champions. If there's ever going to be a situation where the Rams are able to get people into their stadium, this has got to be it. And you have Aaron Donald, Jalen Ramsey, Matthew Stafford, Cooper Kupp, Allen Robinson. You have veterans on this team, right? It's not a young team that is not kind of aware of the spot that they are in their life cycle, right? They know that, you know, they probably don't have that many years left together. And it's not, I don't expect them to come out flat that, you know, after winning the Super Bowl kind of thing. So that is that first leg. I like teasing the Rams from +2 to +8, even at that high total, and then pairing it with a bunch of different games that have lower totals where you can tease through 7 and 3. So let me get your take on that first leg.
Yeah. So there's a lot of appeal to this. I would probably, given the total is 52, I'd rather wait until it's 2.5 because I want that 8.
Do you think it'll get there?
Yeah. Okay. I mean, I think it's either going to get back down to Rams. It's either going to get back down to a pick'em if everything's good about Stafford.
Well, that's kind of my take.
Get out to 2.5. But I think with the total being 52, you really need that 8. You need that 8. Mm. But to your point, like, here's the secondary part of teasing that game. You have it open, right? So what I really like, and again, no one cares about the CFL, blah, blah. But what I like about the CFL is every game is standalone. So if you tease those games, you had, like yesterday I had a situation where I had one of the teams +7.5 and another of the teams -2. And it's like you have this fat middle because and you can set that up, right? So let's say you had and you have to commit to these bets. Like, you can't just, like, leave it open in most cases, right? But let's say you took Rams +8.5. Let's assume on Thursday night. And then you paired it with, and you can go all the way down the list. So you can go New England +8.5. You could go Bengals -0.5, Niners -0.5, Colts -2, Vikings +7.5, Titans -0.5, or all the way to Dallas +8, right? That's what, you know, we're giving away some of the story here, but those are all the teasable lines in week one. If you have, like, let's say you make that bet and the Rams cover that number, then you have all of these opportunities to middle these games, right? You have, you know, you can then take the 6.5 with the Bears. You can then take the 6.5 with the Steelers. You could then, you know, take the +8 with Houston if you're insane. You can lay the 1.5 with the Packers, you know, take the 6.5 or lay it with Tampa. Like, you can do all that. The risk, of course, is that if the Rams bet loses, all these other bets are dead, right? So that's kind of like, but when the games are staggered like this, that changes kind of like the game theory of this, because if conditional on winning that bet, you have a fair amount in the way of value on the rest of your card.
So yes, I think you make all of those points, and my hypothesis would be that as we get closer to game time, the stuff about Stafford, he'll rest, he'll be ready to go. I mean, it's August. We have a month until that game kicks off, a month and a day. So I'm not worried about Stafford there. And I do feel pretty good about that offense, with Allen Robinson now in there. So that's kind of my thought, is I actually don't know if it'll get to 2.5, and I want to have something on that game. So this is that's kind of the best way for me to think about it in terms of getting something I feel good about. I like the Colts -2, certainly. But I think my favorite one, Eric, of the teasable games is the Patriots +8.5 in Miami, total 45. And there are a lot of things that I don't like about the Patriots this year. I feel like they might be one of the least talented Patriots teams that we've seen in a while. I'm nervous about their defensive backs, certainly. But are you really going to bet on Tua blowing out Bill Belichick's defense in week one with all these new pieces? And the answer to me is no. That one to me screams opportunity. And then I also like Vikings +7.5 at home against the Packers, where the Packers offense going to be kind of figuring itself out, and you total 48.5, a Vikings offense that should be pretty solid here, and a Packers defense that should be pretty solid. So I kind of think about those units going and sort of stymieing one another a little bit, keeps that game close.
The Vikings have not lost a game with Kirk Cousins starting by more than a score since Christmas Day of 2020. So that's something where if you again, those are the additional things to add on to a teaser, right? Where somebody might be like, oh, I like Vikings plus 110, which I actually think is a reasonable bet. The Vikings have beaten the Packers the last 2 years. But also just knowing, and I talked to Tate Seth, a former intern with us, about, you know, sort of live betting as well. And it's like, that's also another angle with the Vikings where like all their games stick within a score. So if you ever get a point spread that's sort of like eight or more, like just bet the underdog, you know. But that's another one where, you know, you look at, and again, this isn't relevant to this particular discussion, but like the Ravens are a team that like blow teams out early in the season. Usually last year they didn't with the Raiders, but like they're a team that'll like lay it on when they get a lead early in the season. And there's also teams with things to prove. Like I think Miami does want to prove it to them. But to your point, like I think it's hard for me. Like the narrative there that like you're betting the Patriots plus 8.5 is mostly like everybody that's going to come on the YouTube today and comment here is going to say, did you know Tua's 3-0 against Bill? And it's like, like it's that kind of shit where I'm like, okay, I want to bet against that narrative.
Yeah. You could also think about looking at week one and week two. This is the Paul Carey special, where you look ahead to week two and you go, okay, you know, I hypothesize that by week two, by the time we get there, these lines will have moved in the opposite direction. So I'm gonna grab this teaser here. And there are a couple, if you look to week two, that you can grab. One of my favorites here is Lions are actually a home dog to the Commanders in week two. It's 1.5. You get that out to 7.5. I mean,
by the way, has Wentz been a priv in training camp? It sounds like he's been a complete priv.
Sounds like he's been really atrocious. You listen to Dan Campbell speak for 10 seconds and tell me that that team is going to lose a lot of games by multiple scores. The answer is just hell no. I mean, that guy could be down 40 and he's going to be giving 110%.
By the way, I like that. This is going to let the listeners know that I will bet against my favorite team. The Chiefs are -3.5 on that first Thursday night against the first Amazon Thursday night football game. Our friends, Fred Godelli, Kirk Herbstreit, and Al Michaels. The Chargers are 3.5 point underdogs.
It's 3 on DraftKings, by the way.
Yeah, so yeah. So that's my point is I've seen it 3 everywhere, and now I got this rogue PPH that's offering 3.5. I have to take it, right?
Absolutely.
The Chargers, like, I love the Chiefs, and I'm super pumped about all, like, the cool news about Sky Moore and, like, Joshua Williams and all that stuff. 3.5 is too much here, right? Like, it's ridiculous.
I'm with you there. That's going to be a fun game, by the way.
This league, think about this, the pleasure of this first week. We have Bills Rams is going to be amazing.
Yep.
You know, Patriots Dolphins will be great because we can find out something about either one of those teams. I think Saints Falcons is going to be funny, like at least like kind of like a huge privilege of a game.
Sure. Eagles Lions
is going to be a pillow fight for the ages. Can the Bengals lay 6.5 against the Steelers? That's like a good question. And then then Eagles Lions is another one where I think you're gonna like it's gonna be fun. Like I think that game's gonna be fun because like either the Eagles are this Super Bowl caliber team that we all think they are, and they kill Detroit, or Detroit kind of like frisky again, and it's gonna be a fun game. And then you look at the 4 o'clock games, Raiders Chargers is gonna be amazing, Packers Vikings is gonna be great. And then Sunday Night Chiefs, Football Cardinals. Against Bucks Dallas, like we're in for a treat here. We're just going to ignore for a second Broncos Seahawks, but even that has like you know Russ coming back to Seattle
jeans.
Vibes.
Jeans, so,
like the NFL knows what it's doing. As
our
far
guy
as
Jeans.
Schedule here.
I mean, there's no way we're not betting on Geno Smith. Best training camp tweet, by the way, thus far. And the training camp, the news out of training camp, find me negative news coming out of training camp. You cannot. It's impossible. Every single player, even if it's Drew mentioned this, you know, even if it's even if it's a guy who like had a bad practice, it's like, ah, yeah, but at the end he really kind of came through and you know, and figured it out. But this I thought was by far the best tweet that we've seen thus far. And this is about our guy, Russell Wilson from James Palmer TV, who's great, by the way. Says Broncos are going through a mental rep period. Heard this about Wilson. He literally visualizes every aspect like it's an in-game play, visualizing a pass rusher, moves in the pocket, etc. I was told by a few players it's like a next level type of mental rep they've never seen. I mean, there's too many things there to unpack. The fact that you're seeing a mental rep, which is absolutely incredible. The fact that this is something unique to Russell Wilson, where when he's visualizing the mental rep and then maybe acting it out, that he's doing so by actually visualizing the play, which I think is the intent. But it also speaks to the difference between Drew Lock and Russell Wilson, which I think the players are probably recognizing. Just an incredible tweet, though.
Yeah, by the way, I was doing a little bit of work on, like, you know, offensive line continuity. So I, like, go through and see, like, who the coaches are. And so I was looking at every single coaching roster a couple days ago. And I came about, like, by the way, Nathaniel Hackett just, like, looks – he kind of looks like he – you know, you show up to, like, a Funny Bone in, like, Columbus, mm-hmm. and he's, like, the MC kind of guy. But then you have, you know, below him, you have like these interesting, you have football strategy analysts. That makes a lot of sense. Hey, go for fourth down. Don't go for fourth down. You have assistant to the head coach. You got the Dwight Schrute of the staff. And mm-hmm. then you have this person, John Vieira, who is an instructional designer. And, mm-hmm. and no one else in the league has this person. And I'm guessing that this is a great thing to have, yep. right? Like who says, like, and I was a college professor, I would say, just because I knew a ton of math didn't mean I came out of my degree knowing how to teach it. Like, you know, and you obviously get those reps and stuff, but like you also get a lot of bad habits if you don't curb them. Like, who's to say if you know football really well that you can actually teach it, right? So maybe having like, I think that this is kind of low key woke here for this team to have this like, this basically this pedagogy person on staff.
I think it's very smart. Okay, we're going to close out with a little little quick debate here on receivers. Before we do, promo code FORECAST, FORECAST, get 25% off at pff.com on any subscription with that promo code. You can get locked and loaded for the season. All the things that you need from a fantasy perspective with all of our fantasy tools, all of our great content, grades, stats, plus betting tools coming your way for the NFL season with promo code FORECAST, FORECAST. It's a great gift, by the way. Your fantasy league mates will probably hate you that you have it, but you can make up for it by giving them one after your fantasy draft, of course. Justin Jefferson has been in the news a little bit about you know, whether he's better or worse than his college teammate, former college teammate, Jamar Chase. And you also have Cooper Kupp there, who Justin Jefferson and Cooper Kupp, really the two guys at the top in terms of fantasy ranking. How would you rank these guys? Who's the best receiver right now? And then we'll talk about between Jefferson and Chase, who'd you rather have? But let's start with right now. Better between Cooper and Justin Jefferson.
I think Jefferson's probably the better player. Production-wise, obviously, Kupp has been more productive. But I think Timo Riski, our colleague at PFF, you know, he pointed something really funny out, which was that last year our wide receiver rankings had Kupp at 30 and like no one cared, like no one was upset. And so then he has this humongous season and everybody's like, oh no, he's, and he did lead the league in war, got more games, he got more targets, all that kind of stuff. But, you know, I think in the land of, in trying to split hairs between two very good players, like I was watching a bunch of Vikings games, you know, this back because I was, you know, thinking about them for a weird, you know, you know, this season and whether I should bet over 9 because I actually think that there's a good case for it. You know, I came with Kevin O'Connell, coach of the year at, you know, but Jefferson's open on every play. And I know Kupp is, but I think Cup was designed to be open on every play, whereas with Jefferson, this is already his third play caller of his career.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he's still like just open every play. Kirk certainly will throw him the ball, but the guy is just like an absolute menace out there as far as, you know, I don't know if you can cover him one-on-one. And I don't think it matters where he lines up. And, you know, so will he ever be as productive as Cup? I don't know. I don't think, you know, and I think this is where what separates Stafford and Cousins is, like, I think that they're sort of on average an equal player, but what'll separate Stafford is like the willingness to lead the league in interceptions, right? And
mm-hmm.
and the confidence and the aggressiveness it takes to have some bad games. Whereas, like, I don't think Kirk, you know, the way he is, he's just like kind of not willing to throw those interceptions, and as such, he's just not going to take as many chances. And so it's remarkable that Jefferson has put up what he's put up with a quarterback who isn't as aggressive. So I think Jefferson's better. I think Chase, when you look at, you know, and this is something, if you look at our Sloan paper, just Google me and George's name and Sloan, like we built a metric about like how good of a deep player, a wide receiver is. And we, you know, Ja'Marr Chase had the best outcome of any player in our database.
Mm-hmm.
You know, basically Ja'Marr Chase last year, if you look at how he played, he ran the equivalent of a 4-3-1 on deep routes. You look at Justin Jefferson and, you know, it's more like a 4-4, which is still really good, really top end. But, you know, as far as ball tracking and that kind of thing, Chase was there. Also yards after the catch too. So, and a quarterback, you know, Burrow is, you know, not a turnover worthy prone guy, but he's aggressive as well. So, you know, you throw CeeDee Lamb in there. And I think like those are the four guys that are going to be contending to lead the league in receiving. And I think Lamb is, you know, it's going to be mostly because of targets and, you know, opportunity in that offense. But, you know, those are the four guys. I think Jefferson is the best player among them, but I think Chase is close. Interesting. Very close.
And by the way, no, I'll just say this, maybe you disagree, but like the best receiver in football is Davante Adams. The reason we're not talking about it here is, you know, from a projection standpoint, there's a lot of unknown. He's got, you know, a different team and all that stuff. I think we're drafting wide receivers to play, you know, one snap, one game, one season. I know for I'm taking Davante Adams, but thinking about this is a really interesting conversation because of, you know, kind of the fantasy implication, but also the like looking forward conversation. Would you agree?
Yeah, by the way, if you're looking at receiving yardage, like this is exactly, you know, why we're talking about these men and not necessarily some of these others. If you look at Chase, you're looking at a total on DraftKings of 1,250 yards, which you can bet all these, by the way. If you're looking at Cup's total is 1,300.5 yards. Jefferson is actually 1,350.5 yards, is his player prop. And then, you know, you look at CeeDee Lamb, it's 1,175.5. I think that's the one where if I'm going to make one bet, I'm going to bet over there. Basically, you're just betting that he doesn't get hurt. But Davante Adams, I think people will be surprised. His number's only 1,200 yards and a half a yard. So, like, Adams is projected for a full 150 yards less than Justin Jefferson because of a few reasons. I think people believe that, you know, you're going to have, you know, the Renfro, you're going to have the Waller, and you're going to have some regression. Like, I think Adams right now, you can make the case that he's the best receiver in all of football, but we also have the gravity of like the history of every wide receiver that has left the Green Bay Packers and gone somewhere else. And I think we all believe Adams is different, but we believe we believed it about everybody like Greg Jennings and Jordy Nelson. And I know they weren't in their prime, but you know, like there is some support for the fact that Adams might not end up being like the statistical god that he's been before.
That's a good point. Okay, so the Cup versus Jefferson one, a couple of things that I agree with a lot of the things you're saying. It's so what the big difference for me when I look at their data. Justin Jefferson averaged depth of target of 14 yards down the football field. Cooper Kupp at 8.8. And that's I think, the difference for me is Justin Jefferson, I actually think of these three, is the most complete of any receiver. He's getting open kind of across that entire route tree. He can beat you deep. He can beat you intermediate. I mean, he was an intermediate, you know, assassin last year. That's why his average depth of target is so deep. But even so, might not be thought of as like that deep threat that Jamar Chase is. That's where I'll separate it a little bit. And I think the cool thing about these two is that we will see this year what Jefferson looks like in a scheme that Kupp literally just played in, right? And we'll be able to compare them a little bit more. And I think we'll see in that situation, Justin Jefferson do some things that Cooper Kupp simply, you know, couldn't do deeper down the football field. Cooper Kupp, obviously amazing. I'm not trying to say that he wasn't. He was the second highest graded receiver last year. Like, dude is insane. Jamar Chase is interesting because, to your point, so just as deep of an average depth of target as Justin Jefferson, but the thing that he does that Jefferson does not is he catches passes short and then breaks tackles and still scores touchdowns. It's reminiscent to me of the last guy that I've seen do that kind of thing was a young OBJ, where he would take a slant and he's gone. And the evidence there is obviously really easy to see, but I think a couple stats that bear that out. Jamar Chase broke 19 tackles after the catch last year with an average depth of target 14 yards down the football field. Cooper Kupp broke 24, but his average depth of target was 8.8. Justin Jefferson, who had that same average depth of target, broke just 9. Now, that's not to say he's not a good receiver, but I think it highlights what Jamar Chase has, which is both speed that gets you deep and speed and wiggle that manifests itself at shorter yardages. Now, the question with Chase, 130 targets last year, Justin Jefferson won, 70, Cooper Kupp was at like 199, 200. And so will Jamar Chase be able to add that more like consistent every single down side of things? And if he does, then I actually think it's not clear cut, but I would take Chase over Jefferson long term. You're splitting hairs, obviously. But
yeah, near the end of the show, so let me. I want this.
You're going to be brief, concise but, now. You're going to be concise now. Okay, I get it.
1 minute. What's the likelihood that Justin Jefferson's on a different team this time next year?
Oh my God, you had to. You couldn't resist. You could not resist. We got through 57 minutes of the podcast with Eric Eager in jovial, not taking shots at anybody, not riling anyone up. You got to the end, you got had. I needed one. This is exactly what happened to Stephon Diggs, right? Stephon Diggs, top
a little bit top. Different, but yes, a little bit different, but yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, essentially, hey, great receiver. We got one of the top five receivers in the league, and then he leaves. What are the chances he's gone? I think it's as close to 0% as you can possibly get. And the reason for that is they had Moss, they had Diggs. I think if they lose Jefferson,
they traded Percy Harvin too.
I think if they lose Jefferson here, they might as well pack up shop and go. And I think from Kwesi's standpoint, he realizes that. And here's the reason I think he will stay. I don't think he will request a trade, is that in this offense, he's going to get 180 plus targets. Like, Kevin O'Connell's going to come in there. He's going to go, I get this. Like, I'm going to pump the ball to Justin Jefferson. And his only competition is Adam Thielen. So I put it at 0.01%.
Okay. Here, I'm going to take a minute. It's only going to be a minute. I'm going to be brief. Okay.
First time for everything.
Yeah. The first time for everything. So the outcomes are weird, right? We saw AJ Brown traded because you can't pay the quarterback $30 million and pay your wide receiver that much. We saw Tyreek Hill traded. We saw Devontae Adams traded. You got to think about the coexistence of a highly paid quarterback and a highly paid wide receiver when the highly paid wide receiver is going to be paid more than any of these wide receivers that have been paid already. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if anything short of this team contending for a Super Bowl keeps Jefferson in. Jefferson, by the way, a player who played with Joe Burrow, who just was in the Super Bowl and won a national title, right? Team's 15 and 18 since he joined the team. So I think like they have to turn that around very, very heavily and contend if he's going to stay and play with the quarterback. If they move on from the quarterback to pay Jefferson, you're trying to convince Jefferson to take that money and groom a quarterback, right? Mm-hmm. Like a bright, you know, a high drafted quarterback. That's your best bet, but I don't know if it's one they're going to make. If they win about 9 games, like the market says they're going to, then it comes down to the Diggs thing, where it's like, what am I doing here? I want to win a Super Bowl, and so I actually think like the range of outcomes where he stays is actually thinner than I think a lot of people believe.
You make a compelling case, and if that's true, then that is that's an organizational failure. is the only way to put it, because if you reason that out and you go, there's like a 35% chance, you go back and you say, okay, well, let me go back to the moves that I made that got me there, and let me not make them. That's what you've got to do.
That's a team, by the way, that has about $1 million in cap space next year.
They could fit me under it.
That's certainly yes.
you and I will actually go and I'll volunteer our services. We will help fit under the cap, and we'll do everything we can to keep Justin Jefferson. Let's close out with some recommendations here. Had some people helping people, powerful stuff. You always give out such intellectual, useful recommendations. I'm over here telling people about restaurants to go to, but finally, some people have actually checked them out, and it turns out that I was giving good advice. So I will probably keep that train rolling. What's a recommendation that you have this week?
I've been reading a book called Master Mentors, 30 Transformational Insights from Our Greatest Minds. It's by Scott Jeffrey Miller, who like has a podcast where he interviews these people. He put like a you know, it's basically like a chapter per person. It's really interesting. You know, it's really interesting as far as like motivating people, motivating, you know, systems of people. Really, it's it's great, and it's reading quickly. Like, you know how there's books where you're like, this is a slog. This is not a slog.
Yeah, that's a good one. I'm going to give 2 recommendations. The first is Inspired by You. We were talking about strategy yesterday, and you shared a good article from Harvard Business Review, and it reminded me of a book that I have read actually a few different times, called Good Strategy, Bad Strategy: The Difference and Why It Matters. It's by Richard Rumolt, and it's a pretty quick read, and I think that for anyone in any situation, like, it's, you read this title and you're like, oh, I have to be like a manager or whatever to get something out of this. I actually disagree. I think that it's valuable for you no matter what you're doing in life, because having a good strategy or whatever you're trying to do and accomplish is better than a bad strategy. And it opens it up in a rather simple way. So that's my educational recommendation. And then I'm going to continue with the restaurant recommendations. Had a bunch in San Diego that people have leveraged, a couple in LA. I'm in Northern California right now, and I'm going to give a recommendation here. I generally have not had a lot of success in this area with sushi restaurants, but I did have one that I found here. It's in Menlo Park, so I don't know how many people actually live in this area, but it's called Kyosho, Kyosho. It's a tiny little place. They get incredibly fresh fish from like Japan every morning, and all the rolls there are absolutely dynamite. It's incredible. I highly recommend it. So that will be my restaurant recommendation for
them. Look at that. Yeah. Look at that. One thing I'm going to miss with you in California so much is, not so much like, you know, we would go out to eat fairly often, but I'd always think a little bit about like, would George endorse this? And I got to say, at the FC Cincinnati game last night, I found myself like going up to grab a bite to eat during the halftime. And then I came down empty handed, and my wife's like, what the heck? And I'm like, all these things suck. Like it's kind of interesting.
That honestly, that means more to me than anything, any compliment that I've received in a long time. Hopefully I'm having that impact on, some of our listeners and hopefully the syndicate, which we still have not figured out the right
name.
We have
to rename the syndicate, I think.
We have to rename the syndicate. I had a member of the syndicate suggest the Brothers in Christ Wolfpack. I don't know how I feel about that.
I feel like we're also going to get blowback for that because obviously either like people don't get the joke or they feel excluded.
I don't think it can be the Brethren in Christ. No, I gotta be honest.
I think we have to be more inclusive of other, you know, of other yes. faiths or no faiths. So we probably have to think about it a little bit. I would maybe call it like the Bet Hunters.
That's a little on the nose.
Yeah, the Bet Hunters.
You just can't resist, by the way, coming up with some sort of name that weirdly is going to make people think about porn references. BIC is a problem. Okay. So are Bet Hunters. So
did you see, by the way, there was a new football league that apparently is coming out and the acronym is MLF. I was like, hey, Zach Wilson can play in this league.
We will be back on Wednesday. We have two guests this coming week. We've got one on Wednesday and one on Sunday. They're both going to be very, very good. I promise. One of them is a former guest who we love, who's actually joining PFF this year. Will be creating some content with us. We're stoked about it. And then on Sunday, we have another of our series of professional bettors who's going to come in and talk about betting. So very excited for this. You make sure you want to stay tuned, locked in. For us, we'll see you on Wednesday. Thanks for hanging out. Love y'all.